has joined. Has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We're going to be studying 266 unless somebody wanted to talk about 265 again. And we'll start with the L'shem Yehud. We're talking about section 20 from the Sulam commentary on the Zohar for Parasha Vayera. L'shem Yehud Kutshabri Hu Ishkinte Bikilu Urkimu Utilu Utilu Urkimu.
Has joined.
And sinful towards Hashem. The king of Sodom was decent with Lot because of his respect for his uncle Abraham. Questions. Was Lot aware on the cities surrounding him at the time when he chose his place? If so, how much influence did these wicked cities have upon Lot, or did they? In our very own end of days experiences, how much influence is promoted from those who live lawlessly, spiritually, and with contempt towards Hashem's laws affecting all people of our world. Does Torah study alone help us from repeating the errors of the city of Sodom's generation? Questions, comments, thoughts? I guess this is a stimulating pasuk.
And the thought that came to me is that it was perplexing for me as we were doing the reading just now that no one accepted Lot in Sodom. I thought that was a very strange thing to say. Do you have any idea what was it about the city of Sodom that could not accept Lot? What was he doing?
The city of Sodom was populated by people who were extremely selfish. They did not share in any way, and they passed laws that said if you did share, you were subject to the death penalty.
Okay.
And Lot is a metaphor for the evil inclination of Abraham.
And
so when Abraham took control of his evil inclination, he essentially took control of Lot, taught him to share, taught him to be aware of the Torah's laws. And even though he chose to separate from Abraham, he can't really separate from Abraham because metaphorically he's the evil inclination. So he was constantly, whenever Abraham would do a good deed, Lot was going to have that good deed affect him. Because that's what happens within us. We hear two different voices inside of us. One comes from Hashem and one comes from Satan. And when we choose to listen to the voice from Hashem, our evil inclination falls into line and supports the action that we have decided. And if we choose to follow the voice from Satan, then our good inclination falls into line and supports the action that we are choosing to do. So that relationship between Abraham and Lot would never be separated. Because while the Zohar tells us it's a metaphor, it's really the relationship within ourselves of our good inclination and our evil inclination. And our world, one of the aspects of our tikkun is to control the evil inclination by the good inclination. Another way of understanding that is controlling the body consciousness from the soul consciousness. And a further way of describing that is controlling the body lusts, the body emotions, the body desires that really are, we know, are negative, but all of that is teaching the body to love spirituality. So that is what is going on, why it says that the people in Sodom would not accept Lot. In truth, in our world, the people of the other nations do not accept the children of Israel. And that's essentially the same thing. Because in a macro level, the nations of the world and the children of Israel, they represent the good inclination and the evil inclination the same way.
Okay. I like that reminder that Lot is the representation of our evil inclination. What I think fascinates me, Hanok, is that when the angels came, remember when Abraham circumcised himself and his nephew Lot? They said it was sitting at the gates of the city. Well, what I understand
he was sitting. Abraham was in the.
Abraham was in a tent, but Lot was sitting at the city gates when the angels arrived.
When the angels came to the city of Sodom, Lot was sitting in the gate of the city. Why? Because Lot knew the angels were coming because of the consciousness relationship between Abraham and Lot. Because there is a relationship between the good inclination and the evil inclination. There is a conscious relationship between our good inclination and our evil inclination.
Yes, there is, what I understand. Well, what I thought was interesting, just correct me if I'm wrong on this in my understanding, the reason why Lot was at the city gates, I had the impression that he was one of the judges of the city. Have I misunderstood that?
One of the Midrashim says he was a judge of the city. Others do not mention it. Others say, you know, other things about it. We have to understand what is a Midrash. The Torah has gaps. It doesn't really have gaps, but the Torah describes Sfirot in terms of stories. The stories represent the Peshat level of the Torah.
Right.
The Sefirot represents the Sod level of the Torah. We have morals and ethics, which is the Drash, the Midrash level of the Torah.
Right.
So when people would write stories, and many of the stories we are taught were written by Rabbi Shimon, as well as the Zohar was written from his teachings. These Midrashim are filling in the gaps in the story. They're helping us to reconcile the Peshat level with the Sod level. But you literally can have 4, 5, 6, 100 Midrashim, and some of them are completely opposites of each other. And how do you reconcile them? That's the issue. So was Lot a judge in the gate? Was he a judge of the city? Perhaps he was. But why would they have chosen Lot to be the judge? It's expressed in this pasuk. The king liked Lot because he remembered what Abraham did for him. And Lot was Abraham's nephew. So the king accepted Lot. That doesn't mean the rest of the population did so. The king could have appointed him a judge. Doesn't mean the rest of the population would have accepted him.
Okay. I like
but we
that.
We have to reconcile the various Midrashim. If you speak about the binding of Isaac, the Akedah, there's a Midrash that literally says that Isaac died. His soul left his body.
Right.
When Abraham held the knife over him. And at other times, it says that he literally, because he was identified as a potential burnt offering, an ovah to elevate Abraham, That's why he couldn't leave the land. You have all these different midrashim, and there are like four or five different midrashim about the binding that explains what Isaac's feelings were. And they're all different, and they're all difficult to reconcile. They're describing different emotions that Isaac felt. And I'm sure if you put yourself in Isaac's place, you would have felt different emotions, as we do in the events in our life. You have one reaction to an event, and then you calm down and you have a different feeling about that event. So the Torah is describing human beings. But it's easy to forget that.
Is it easier to forget that we're souls of heart, and that's what we forget more instead of being a human being? If you have to make a choice.
Raka, you broke up. Say it again at the beginning. What did you just say?
My question is, let's see if I remember. My thought and question is that if we had to make a choice, isn't it true that we forget more that we are soul-like beings, you know, than human? We're so much in our physicality that we're always reminded that we're human, that we belong in a certain place, you know, how to conduct ourselves. We're always being disciplined and being human, and yet it's our soul that hungers for the spiritual. So to remind ourselves that we are souls, that's where the value of Torah comes in my opinion. It's easier to be more human than it is to be a soul representing being children of our Creator. That tends to be forgotten more so in our day.
Yes, that is what is forgotten going through our day, because the body consciousness, being the left column, is the stronger of the emotions. Gevurah is stronger than Chesed. We think of Chesed as a still small voice of Hashem. Gevurah is shouting. The strength of Gevurah versus Chesed. But the issue is to teach the body, to teach Gevurah to desire spirituality. But because we are so inclined to the physical, we forget that. And the Torah reminds us of it. Unless you're reading the Torah literally, as most of the world does.
Right. That's a Peshat level, is it not?
It is one of the levels, the Peshat level. But without understanding the Sod, you cannot understand the Peshat, and that's the teaching of the Vilna Gaon. And he is very clear on that. One must study the Sod level, the Kabbalah level. But the Jewish world says, oh yeah, you can study that, but nobody does because you're not ready. And why they say that, you know, there's many different opinions, but that's essentially what people speak of. In today's yeshivot, a child starts at 3 years old, and he is taught the Aleph Bet. And by the time he's 6 years old, they've introduced the Mishnah. By the time he's 8 years old, they've introduced the Gemara. Did you hear me say anything about the Tanakh? Did you hear me say anything about reading the prophets or the books, the writings? Did you hear me say anything even of reading the Bible itself, the five books of Moses? He's taught it. The five books of Moses, he is taught to read at the Peshat level, at the story level, from the time he's 3 to the time he's 6. But they never get into the prophets. They never get into the writings. And if you ask them, well, how come you don't do that? They said, well, the children do it on their own because they're interested. And now you can understand why the Orthodox movements, the yeshiva, where the yeshiva bokers are taught, they tend to go astray, at least in my opinion.
Right. Well, you know what I discovered, Hanok, and it had to do with where I live. We had a rabbi, and I had mentioned how much I loved reading Mishlei. And she was in shock. She goes, that's a useless book. Why even waste your time on it? That's what she told me. I was in shock when I heard that from her. But anyway, we all have our different levels of need to seek wisdom. But so it's not just happening in the Orthodox world. I'm just adding on, it happens in even the Reform conservative world too.
Of course. Does anybody else want to make a comment? Well, we're
I know from teaching children, and you know from teaching children, that if you don't present it to them, chances are they're not going to go on their own and look something up. At least, you know, in the early grade school, unless you make them go. So,
I disagree with you. The majority of the children, that is true. But if you get an inquisitive child and you don't shut down their inquisition, they'll go and read it on their own.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of good to know.
In today's world, they're going to be attracted to the visual, so to the movies, to the YouTube videos. They're going to be attracted to the Saturday morning TV shows with all of the advertisements. But if you teach them to love reading, which is something that it's very difficult to do for most of the children today, but
right.
If you teach them to love reading, they will go off and study on their own, because children are naturally inquisitive. What you're describing, and I'm describing because it applies to most children today, they're taught not to be inquisitive.
Right.
How many of my students, how many of other people, as they grow, they want to learn more about Judaism. They get taught halakha. They get taught specifics, but they never are taught why. And so it turns them off. It turns them into rote responses. And that's the mistake, again, in my opinion. You know, the rabbi's been doing this for 3,000 years, but in reality, that was 3,000 years, people have not changed. But every once in a while, get an inquisitive child, and nobody turns him off, and he goes off amazing places.
Well, we used to have, when we had a Torah study on Saturday morning, one of the old guys, that's what I call them, because they've been there forever and know just about everything there is to know, in my opinion, and made the comment that there's nothing new under the sun. It's just the names and the faces change.
Well, he is right, because he's quoting King Solomon. He's quoting Ecclesiastes, which is where it said there's nothing new under the sun, or Kohelet, actually. Did I stop somebody from saying something? I apologize.
No, I agree with what you're saying. It was from Ecclesiastes, Hanok. And what's the beauty is that, and I just learned this, it's so odd. I came to understand that with each holiday, there's the Pacific Megillah. You know, I never put it together. And then to find out, you know, it's amazing how sometimes I don't put things together. But anyway, it was just brought to my attention today or yesterday late in the evening that Ecclesiastes was the Megillah for Sukkot. Even though I would read it as a sign, right, I just never put it together. And I just love how, you know, when you read Ecclesiastes, it kind of gives you a wake-up call. Yes, we're in this brilliant, beautiful experience of Sukkot, celebrating, you know, what we've learned thus far from the past year that's passed. Now we've entered just a few weeks into the new year, and then we're commanded to find joy and thanksgiving in the Sukkah that we've made, and what we bring into the Sukkah is the joy that carries us through the new year. So it was just amazing how hearing that, I don't know, very strange, but just enlightening, though.
It's always good when a plan comes together, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It just is. Very beautiful. You don't feel so alone, right?
Just to clarify, Ecclesiastes is the scroll to read on Sukkot, but Sukkot Shabbat Kol HaMoed. And this year there is no Shabbat Kol HaMoed. So we read it on Shmini Atzeret. And the most interesting verse in Ecclesiastes, from my opinion, is vanity of vanities. There is nothing but vanity.
Yeah, but I like that one too.
That English translation conceals so much. Because the Hebrew word for vanity that's being translated as vanity is hevel, which is the name of one of the sons of Adam and Eve. And hevel actually refers to, refers to wind. So what people don't understand, the sub-level of that verse, the word vanity means one wind or one spirit. Vanity of vanities, a plural means there's at least two. So you now have three winds or spirits. Vanity of vanities, there is nothing but vanities, is literally describing the seven sephirot.
Wow.
Devora, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut.
That's beautiful. Wow. I've never heard it explained that way before, Hanok. Wow. It gives you a different take on it, knowing that it's, you know, breath. It's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
You know,
thank you, Hanok.
You're very welcome. The English word vanity, we seem to think that that's nothing. It's everything.
Right.
It's so powerful.
Well, it is, now that I hear it this way, because it was confusing for me when I would read that, and I go, but that means emptiness. What does that mean? You know, and yet, when you reflect upon your experience in living, you realize if that's the definition of vanity, then if your experience has been much more than that, then you know it doesn't apply. Anyway, maybe it's set up that way to help us question.
Another level. When you find out, as I said, it's the name of Hevel. It's name of
right.
Abel.
Right. And Abel was not the reincarnation of Moshe? Am I right on that one?
Moshe was the reincarnation of Abel.
Yeah.
But what I'm describing, when you talk about, in Kabbalah, someone dies, it means that now, their time was up. It was time for them to die.
Right.
But Cain killed Abel. So But it means that Abel died for some sin that he committed. So what was his sin? And I'm bringing it back to the same point that you made at the beginning, Bracha. Abel died because he was a very high spiritual soul. But he was more interested in physicality. He brought the sacrifices. But the word that's used is he also brought sacrifices. It wasn't his consciousness positive. It wasn't his primary value. He also brought sacrifices. Cain brought sacrifices and they weren't accepted because he didn't bring the best of what he had. Abel also brought sacrifices. He brought the best of what he had. But because it was secondary in his thoughts, he was more interested in the physical pleasures. And at being such a high soul, that's why the court decreed that he died.
Wow.
We're
so
out of time.
He was kind of like what we call today keeping up with the Joneses.
You got it.
Good point.
Well, you all have a beautiful evening. Questions?
Thank you, honey. Beautiful tonight.
Thank you.
Shalom. Shalom Gadol.
Shalom.